Welcome to the podcast. This episode is brought to you by Maison Beljanski, providing natural supplements for helping your body's healing and wellness, inspired by over 40 years of groundbreaking research. Today, we're joined by Dr. Darren Weissman. Dr. Weissman is a leading chiropractic holistic physician, author, and world-renowned expert on the subconscious mind. Dr. Darren, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Nathan, it's an honor. Great to be with you.
So you wrote a best-selling book, The Power of Infinite Love and Gratitude, which sounds awesome. And, you know, love and gratitude are two, well, I'd say gratitude is part of love, right? And we know that when we tap into those emotions, a lot of the work that HeartMath has done, for example, and some great leading scientists and some of my colleagues over the years have done, Greg Braden, Bruce Lipton, a lot of these great pioneers and leaders in this field, and through the HeartMath Institute, have shown that when we tap into these emotions of gratitude and love and compassion, we actually create heart coherence, right? We create a vibration within and around our bodies and around our hearts that creates a level of coherence, which leads to, you know, better thinking, an entire chemical system in the body of that supports immune system function, health and healing, longevity, upregulation of anti-aging genes, all kinds of amazing stuff just by practicing gratitude and tapping into the energy, the vibration of love. And so, you know, I thought it'd be a great place to kind of start the conversation. You wrote a book on this. You were in a documentary, Heal, which I saw. I think that's on Prime or Netflix, right? Yeah. Which is a great documentary. So, yeah, talk a little bit about that and a little bit about your background, if you don't mind, that kind of led you down this work.
Sure. I mean, what a great way to start. Gratitude in the season of the holidays that we're in right now, being able to be thankful. And such as this moment, I'm so grateful to be here with you and to connect with your audience. And, you know, these are the kinds of things that being thankful for are easy. And then there's other aspects of life, whether it be our body speaking to us with symptoms or our family having struggles or things that are going on in the world, where saying thank you is a whole other world. It's a whole other world of like, how do I say thank you to a level of pain that I don't understand or a level of fear that's causing me to doubt or feel uncertain? And one of the things, Nathan, that I thought was so cool was when I witnessed Masaru Emoto's research on water.
Yeah.
And he showed that love and gratitude was the most powerful frequency, and it formed this gorgeous crystal. And I thought, well, it's amazing. It's amazing how it's affecting water. Our body is water. But how are the subconscious thoughts affecting the health of our body? How are our subconscious thoughts influencing the relationships in our life? Oh, that's so cool that you've got that there. Exactly. And yeah, so
just for those who are watching and not listening, I just pulled up some images. And if you're just listening, you can pull these up, you know, on your phone as well, right? If you just Google Masaru Emoto's crystal love water, and you can see how when you put these intentions into, you know, there's a whole chart, I think this is it, right? That shows like when you put negative energy, negative emotions, what happens to the crystallization of the water when it's frozen versus, you know, love, gratitude, kindness, things like that, and how these incredible crystals form. I saw this, I don't know, probably 15 years ago. It's been around for a while, right? And this is like, it is revelatory. You're like, wow, how our thoughts and energy and emotions literally imprint into the creation around us. And so, sorry to cut you off there. I just wanted to give people a visual who don't know about
it. Yeah, for sure. It's relevant, and it's important to see it because it's hard to believe if you haven't witnessed it or read about it. I heard about it in the year 2000, and what was amazing, and I am a holistically trained chiropractor and an acupuncturist and a kinesiologist, and have dove deep into homeopathy and neurolinguistic programming and multiple different things as ways to naturally help people heal. And in 1998, it was so interesting. My cousin, who is the first deaf chiropractor to graduate from the Palmer College of Chiropractic, wow. we were finishing up the end of a day with just fully booked people. And he turns to me and he goes like this. And I feel something. I'm like, what is that? Rob goes, I love you. I'm like, wow. Because I felt it. And I would imagine that most of your listeners are empathic and sensitive, and they feel things. And so I'm like, come over here. And I do something that's called applied kinesiology. Muscle reflex testing is one of my passions, masteries. And so I found a reflex on him that went weak, means his nervous system was not regulating. And I simply went, I love you. And in an instant, a weak muscle reflex went from weak and giving way to strong and locking out. And it blew my mind because I thought, wait a second. What controls the reflexes? The nervous system.
Right.
What does the nervous system control? Everything. I
Right.
didn't adjust somebody. I didn't stick a needle in them. I didn't give them a supplement or homeopathic remedy. I simply said, I love you. There was a vibrational frequency. So 2 years later, I'm introduced. It's the year 2000. I'm introduced to Masaru Emoto's work. And I see this love and gratitude. I realize in that moment, Rob's system was picking up this vibration of love. And in that moment, the water of his body took on this vibrational frequency that conducted that directly influenced his nervous system. And that really opened me up to a journey of realizing that there's an interconnectivity of all these different things that we know of the mind, of the body, of neuroplasticity, of epigenetics, of psychoneuroimmunology that come together and that can allow people to use this. It's one thing to have a practice of gratitude and have a gratitude journal and say thank you to everything. It's one thing, but how do we plant seeds of gratitude on a subconscious level to directly influence biological behavioral transformation? How do we go about doing that? And that's been what my work has been all about, is being able to access the subconscious mind with this vibrational frequency of love. And with the vibrational frequency that in the Lifeline technique, what I teach that I've been teaching for the past 22 years, to use a vibrational frequency of infinite love and gratitude to create a transformation and create a, like you said, a heart coherence that influences brain, body, behavior in anyone.
Yeah, so let's talk about subconscious mind for a minute and how that's literally driving upwards of 95% of people's daily actions, right? It's believed that somewhere between 5, maybe 5% of our actions daily, our thoughts, our words,
If
actions,
we're lucky, if we're lucky,
if we're lucky, yeah,
we're
5%.
lucky,
I think Bruce Lipton would say 5%, but yeah, if we're lucky,
maybe.
right, is conscious, actually thinking about and actively consciously making decisions. This is just kind of a blanket statement, right? There's outliers and people who
Sure.
practice meditation and this work you're talking about that are not driven as much by the subconscious. But let's say majority of us, 5% conscious, 95% subconscious, and most of those subconscious thoughts and beliefs, unfortunately, are coming from our troubled childhood, right? And I say our troubled childhood because there's very few people who made it out of childhood without one or multiple traumas, without one or multiple negative, subconscious beliefs of doubt, doubt in yourself, which eventually leads to anxiety, right? Or, I'm not good enough, or, afraid of certain things. It's funny, I meet people, because I coach clients, from a holistic perspective as well, and it's like I meet people all the time that have all these fears, these interesting fears, and I'm like, well, do you know where that came from? And they don't even remember. They don't remember why they're afraid of beetles or snakes or spiders or something. I start talking to them about, do you remember a movie you saw when you were a kid or something? Oh, yeah, I saw this movie about these giant spiders that ate everybody and da da da. I'm like, well, there you go. It's still stuck in your subconscious. Naturally, we shouldn't be afraid of spiders. Most of them, it's like we're 10 times bigger, 100 times bigger than a spider, and most of them are not poisonous and going to hurt us, and yet irrational fears, but it also leads to sabotaging success, sabotaging relationships, sabotaging, parenthood, wealth, all kinds of things. And so getting into the subconscious, and I'd love for you to talk about this and maybe give people some big picture and then some practical things to think about of like how the subconscious can be negatively affecting your life every single day, and then what can people actually do about it.
Yeah, I mean, so well said, brother. I mean, the essence of it, it's ginormous, and it's processing billions of bits of information in any given moment, where the conscious mind can only handle so much, and then it will implode. And so the subconscious takes over for all the functions of our body. You do not need to tell your heart to beat right now. If you just ate, you just drink some coffee or water, you don't need to tell your system how to process that. how to breathe and take in the oxygen into your red blood cells so that your mitochondria can produce ATP and reductive oxidative molecules. You don't need to tell your system that your subconscious is running that, and it knows everything. It knows everything. And if it was only taking over biological function, genetic expression, if it was only doing that, that would be amazing. But the subconscious does store every memory. And the reality of it is that I have found that when someone says, "Oh yeah, I saw a movie when I was this age," that's actually not it. Because the true subconscious, we don't know what's in there. We don't, no one knows what's in the subconscious. If they did, it's not the subconscious. So the nature of it is it's like a treasure map, a pirate's treasure map. It's like go 20 feet this way. When the sun hits at noon, this the water, it's going to give you a casting shadow on a tree. And then you're going to take a left for 5 feet. That the subconscious has a code to it, and it unfolds in its own unique way once we unlock particular doors. So creating a relationship with a part of ourselves that is absolutely driven by primitive means and protection and survival is a unique thing because it knows how to put on a mask. It knows how to avoid. It knows how to get by becoming a pleaser or a prover or whatever it might be that perpetuate these cycles of I'm not enough. So at the core, we have all have memories, and the subconscious mind stores memories. And there's memories that are great. There's memories that suck. And then there's memories that we don't remember. And there's an aspect of the subconscious mind where it is programmed to cause us to protectively forget a moment in time because the ability to be in a state of love and gratitude doesn't exist. I want to circle back there. In a particular moment where something's going on, let's say at 5 years of age, dad's an alcoholic, mom is off somewhere, whatever it might be, and it's not a safe environment. It's not a protective environment. The subconscious mind will take snapshot pictures of all the sensory data, and it will back up 1 millisecond. It's called T minus one. It will back up 1 millisecond, and that memory is frozen in time, where we've been literally hypnotized to forget it, yet the sensory data is still there. So it becomes Pavlovian. It becomes conditioned where all of a sudden these parts become triggered, activated. And now, in that triggered moment, the five-year-old hijacks the heart. And now the coherence of the heart is from a five-year-old who's in an environment of dad's addiction and mom's insecurity. And the heart beats in that way, and it's sending signals to the limbic parts of the brain, the amygdala. The hippocampus are now producing neurochemicals. The brain's firing signals where it's creating neural pathways of the five-year-old. And these chemicals, the neuropeptides, the molecules of emotion, course through our bloodstream. And there's specific receptors. You bring up Bruce Lipton, the protein receptors in our cells, like a lock and key, bind these neuropeptides, these molecules of emotion. And in that moment, our cells are feeling, functioning, and forming new cells as a five-year-old. But here I am, I'm 56. And it does it as if it's happening for the first time, because for the subconscious mind, it is the first time.
Right.
Again and again and again and again until we wake up. And so as much as like, and I like your question as far as like, how does it show up as far as, you know, in a way that it's causing problems for people? One of the things in working with the subconscious mind is the first thing that must be laid down is what if every problem that you're going through in your life, in your business, in your family, in your relationships, in your health, what if it was a portal? What if it was a doorway that allowed you to step into a world that enables you to transform in a way that you could never even imagine. In fact, it's only your imagination that could actually take you to this place. What if the diagnosis, what if the struggle with money and the different face, different name, but the same kind of rejection or anxiety attachment going on in a relationship, what if that was actually a feedback mechanism versus a failure or a mess up? And in all reality, it is. That's how the subconscious mind speaks. It speaks through symptoms of the body. But there is no body without a mind. And as much as we got, there's so many smart people in the world, geniuses, enlightened people, people that are more aware, awake, and understanding things better than ever. Yet, the design of the subconscious mind is it's always 7 times faster than our best ninja trained self. So you can be doing ice baths, you can be doing meditation, you can be doing affirmation, be doing all kinds of things. Your subconscious mind will take you to the next level because one of the parts of the subconscious mind that is beyond the primitive protective survival mechanism is the subconscious mind's design for evolutionary purposes. The subconscious mind awakens us in a way that we would otherwise never wake up. I call it a gift in strange wrapping paper. I'd much rather wake up with a kiss on the forehead saying, Darren, today you're going to discover the most beautiful essence of joy and abundance and the greatest relationships and the most fulfilling life. I'd love to wake up with a kiss on a forehead, but how we wake up is you get this diagnosis. All of a sudden, this relationship ends. All of a sudden, this type of change where I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to deal with it. These are the portals of evolutionary transformation that the subconscious mind gives our spirit and our human self the opportunity to grow and learn here in Earth School. Have fun day.
I love that. I love that. I recently had went through, I've been through many of those portals, but a recent one, a story I'll share that is was very profound for me. I've been training almost 7 years to be a professional CrossFit athlete. Was training upwards of 5 or 6 hours a day, on top of running multiple businesses, family, kids, the whole thing, right? So you can imagine going into my late 30s, pushing as hard as 22-year-olds, 5, 6 hours a day with everything else on top of it. My body just wasn't recovering enough, but I just kept pushing, 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 pushing. And eventually, and I got very, very close to, breaking through to that next level, but my body started breaking down and I wasn't listening. I just kept pushing towards that goal, pushing towards that goal. And then basically, my shoulders were just like, this is it, no more. The pain just got so profound. It was like, I can't do this anymore. My shoulders are going to tear off my body if I keep doing it. I'm not going to have any shoulders left. So I stopped and then, really started diving deeper into my meditations and spiritual practice and asking. Dr. Francisco Contreras said it so beautifully in my cancer documentary years ago. He said, you have to stop asking God. Why me? Why me, God? Why me? Why do I have this cancer diagnosis? And start asking, what for? What is
Exactly.
this for? What is this here to awaken me to? What is this, as you said beautifully, what is this portal? What's this door? What's this opportunity? What is this for? So, of course, I said, okay, all right, let go of my ego, let go of my goals, let go of my ambitions, dreams, desires, relax into a meditation. God, what is this for? Boom. And it was so clear. It was just like, the answer came and it was like, all right. So, I went from this every single day for almost 7 years. So we're talking, a couple thousand days dreaming, visualizing, working towards a very specific goal, to then dropping it in a second and going, all right, it's time for me to move to the next thing, which is way beyond what I was actually working towards, and accept this pain and everything fully. And go deeper into my spiritual practices and deeper into the work I'm here to do in the world. And so, whether it's a cancer diagnosis, diabetes, or heart disease, or physical pain or trauma in the body, there's always that if we ask, okay, what is this for? What's the higher purpose of this? What is this guiding me towards? What am I supposed to learn from this? How can this help me? And we ask earnestly, right, from that kind of heart coherent meditative state. Or hypnotic state, you can get into hypnotherapy. There's a lot of ways to do it. For me, I just get into a meditation and ask that question. The answer always comes, and if we listen to it and follow it, everything starts to get better. Am I right? It's like everything starts to align and things get better and better and better.
Yeah, it does. It does. There's a in my third book, it's called The Heart of the Matter. I teach a process that's an aspect of the Lifeline technique. This is what's called the Lifeline technique flow chart. And ultimately, it is an integration of everything that I've ever studied throughout my life, from Chinese medicine to chiropractic philosophy to the chakras to aspects of NLP and epigenetics, just multiple things that just is a step by step by step by process. And I love that it's something that people are doing naturally on their own, or people that are on the path are doing on their own. Like you just had a moment, like, what does this mean to me? Why is this happening for me? And there's an aspect that I teach called the see, feel, hear. And the see, feel, hear is the way that the brain processes information visually, kinesthetically, and auditorily, is how we learn, but it's also how cells learn. And so when we take a moment and hear it, so like a practical application you were talking about, here's a person who is having shoulder pain or in a diagnosis or in this conflict that does not have a resolution for whatever reason. What emotion does it cause you to feel? Oh, I'm scared. Oh, I'm angry. Oh, I'm helpless. Doesn't, oh, it, whatever it might be, whatever emotion it is. Infinite love and gratitude. The secret sauce in the Lifeline technique is this hand mudra and the vibration of infinite love and gratitude. Infinite love and gratitude to the emotion. And then go into the movie theater of your mind and see that emotion associated with whatever it is, the shoulder, the diagnosis, the relationship pain. See that emotion. For example, helpless, infinite love and gratitude. Just observe it, breathe. Infinite love and gratitude. And now, and as you see it, you'll notice it just kind of like dissipates like clouds. And then feel it. Feel the helpless. Notice where it lives. Notice the quality, the intensity. Notice the familiarity. Breathe infinite love and gratitude. Infinite love and gratitude. You will feel something like a rock become like a feather. Infinite love and gratitude. And just keep doing it until it transforms. And then listen. And that was the cool thing, because you listened, you went into the auditory pathway and you got the message. You got the message for that moment where you're like, here I am for 1,000+ days doing this. You got the message. It's time for the next leg of my journey. Something prophetic, something profound will come through, where a voice, which is your highest self, your soul, will speak through you and to you from this pain point, from this portal, and it'll take you there. There's other aspects, but this is a simple practical application that anyone can do. Get the emotion, see it, feel it, hear it. I love you, hand mudra, universal healing frequency, infinite love and gratitude. And apply it. I'd love to hear back from you. And it's so simple. I've taught thousands of people this. It's so simple. Sometimes people feel like, oh, that's bullshit. How could that possibly be? And the reality is it doesn't work if you don't use it, right? It only works when we apply things, but it is something that ultimately utilizes this vibration of love and gratitude and a higher power, and that there's meaning and purpose in the pain, and that the problem is a portal, and it is a feedback mechanism that has intelligence, like orchestrating stars, just like orchestrating the seasons, just like orchestrating why a sperm and egg come together and form a beautiful human being and give us life. Once we realize that we've got this type of power to access our biology, our behavior, our life, we realize that we then also have access to the seasons and the stars. And we start to realize that we can tap into a level of manifestation that is really profound, that influences humanity in its highest self, by tapping into this level of consciousness and creating a relationship, a harmonization with our subconscious mind. It's not our enemy. It's not because we're a victim of it. It's a gift in strange wrapping paper. It's attempting to be a friend, and we just don't speak its language. And if you don't speak a language in a foreign country and you want to find the bathroom, it's tough. And so it's the same kind of thing. We're like in a foreign land in our own bodies. We're like in a foreign land in our own marriages or partnerships. And when we get triggered, something else comes to life. And when we learn to use these triggers as a feedback mechanism, we get curious about them. Something miraculous truly opens up, and we discover deeper levels of self-acceptance, of self-compassion, of self-forgiveness, of self-gratitude. And from that self, actualization, then we can give and receive in that same way. Something else opens that's really, really special.
Beautiful. So I want to ask you a question. A little bit of context behind it is, you mentioned earlier Molecules of Emotion. So obviously, you know Dr. Candace Pert's work pretty well, very well, I'm sure.
I knew
And
her very well.
yeah, she's a pioneer in discovering, what neuropeptides are doing in the body, right? And in my cancer research, I've worked with thousands of cancer patients over the past decade. One of the things that I teach is a basis of her work is understanding the importance of resolving these childhood traumas and these adverse events that happen to us in our, whether we're children or even in adulthood. We can have an adverse event or a trauma that we store. And as the body releases these neuropeptides and we don't, as the brain releases them and we don't, and we store them in tissues and organs and we don't actually release them out of our body, they not only can cause a chronic inflammatory condition in tissues in the body, but they are also chemoattractants, meaning they can attract cancer cells and support and contribute towards cancer growth in the body. So one of the first things, one of the most important things that we teach our cancer patients through my organization, Conquering Cancer, is we have to heal emotionally. We got to work on the subconscious. We've got to do the meditation and the subconscious healing. And that's got to be a priority in the work. Yes, the diet, the nutrition, the plant-based, the detox, the saunas, the ice baths, the exercise, the sleep, all that stuff's important. But to
All of
me,
it.
80% of it is in the mind and in the subconscious and in, the spirit. And so we have to release those neuropeptides. And so on one hand, those are literally molecules, right? But we go back to ancient Chinese medicine. You talk about traditional Chinese medicine and Qigong. So we go back to TCM or let's say Eastern medicine, and everything's looked at as energy. Doesn't matter, it's a molecule, doesn't matter. And we know in quantum physics today, everything's energy as well, right? But they knew thousands of years ago that everything was energy. And so through the practice of Qigong, which I've studied with master Qigong teachers over the years, and it's such a powerful practice. I've seen incredible healings happen in like 4 or 5 days at a Qigong retreat center where people show up in wheelchairs and they're walking by the fifth day. People are healing cancers, all kinds of things after months of practicing. Incredible things, miracles. And they're only focusing on awakening the energy, what they call the blocked energy or the blocked qi in the body, right? And they're not even addressing or bringing up the memories or going back into the childhood or the traumas and saying, remember when this happened or that, and let's address that. They're literally just moving energy. And then these traumas release on their own. People have, are crying, and but they don't even know why they're crying, and they're screaming, laughing, whatever. And then all of a sudden, their body starts to get into that parasympathetic state where it can heal itself. And so, from that perspective, you don't even have to address the trauma itself. A lot of modern techniques, and I've experimented with these hypnotherapy and rapid transformational therapy and these wonderful techniques where you do go and relive the experience, and then bring it up and heal it and transform it, right? Where do you stand on that? Like, do you apply kind of both of that? Do you think people have to go through and address the trauma directly, or they can kind of heal these things just through the Lifeline technique where it doesn't even address the trauma, it's just an energetic release? Can you talk about where you stand on that?
With the cold and flu season here, it's critically important that we enhance and strengthen our immune systems. Yes, would you agree? The problem is, though, that there's so much confusion out there when it comes to what actually works for our bodies and for our health. Well, I'll tell you what I used. I use Maison Beljanski's wellness products. Maison Beljanski's products are backed by science to not only help empower the immune system, but can support detoxification and contribute to our overall health. Coming from Europe, the all-natural Beljanski formulas are now available in the United States and are recommended by top doctors everywhere. A lot of the colleagues I work with, functional medicine practitioners that work with patients with all kinds of diseases, are recommending Maison Beljanski's products to their very own patients. As a special sponsor of this podcast, Maison Beljanski has included a very special discount offer for all of my listeners. You can get 15% off your first order using the promo code Nathan, and you'll always enjoy free shipping when you order 4 products or more. You can grab your wellness products today at maisonbeljanski.com. That's MAISONBELJANSKI, maisonbeljanski.com, and use code Nathan for 15% off. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, I want to give you a free gift that I have spent over a decade researching thousands of hours of peer-reviewed studies and interviewing hundreds of world-leading functional medical doctors and cancer conquerors that lays out a blueprint for helping your mind and body become a cancer-fighting fortress for natural cancer prevention and healing. And that's my Amazon number one best-selling book, Becoming Cancer-Free. The physical copy sells for like 10 bucks on Amazon, which, you know, you can go get that if you want, but I'm happy to give you the ebook absolutely free. Just head over to becomingcancerfree.com and you can download that ebook instantly. Again, that's becomingcancerfree.com, and it's yours as a gift for me to you for tuning into this podcast. All right, let's get to the show.
Great conversation, and I think it's maybe the most important thing about it is because it's not therapy. You do not need to talk about it at all. You don't need to relive anything. It's more about the essence of Lifeline is about first getting really present. It's a form of acupuncture without needles, something called the connection that literally activates the power centers within our system. And we literally, it's like tuning an instrument. And once it's tuned, there's a process where a client or a student that learns this to do this with themselves or with their own clients guides people to first observe what it is, cancer. Like I have a guy that I was working with, he had a tumor in his right upper lobe of his lung. 12 weeks into sessions, and I'm doing it remotely, goes back and has a scan and it's gone. I don't heal people. The power that creates us is the power that heals us. Happens no other way. It is a philosophy that I live by. Take no credit, take no blame. It's more of like bridging that gap and creating harmony. Does somebody need to talk about it? No, they don't need to talk about it. Is talking healthy for people? It can be. It can also be destructive for people. Depends upon how they're led through it in reframing something in a way that turns it into a portal versus a problem. But no, what we do is we do not release anything. We do not clear anything. We connect with specific vibration, frequency, and energy that is tied in with the meridians, that is tied in with the chakras, that is tied in with the whole neuroplastic, neuropeptide, epigenetic expression. And we entrain it with the vibration that we've set from the heart and its highest self. And we use the imagination at the beginning of a session to imagine that we're in a higher place. And in that imagination where a person is in that coherence, all of a sudden they're like, well, how does it feel to go from being in this anxiety and fear and doubt and anger to a place where I am healthy, whole, and complete? How does it feel? How does it feel to believe that? Feels amazing. And when somebody goes into that amazing place, and it's pretend because it's imagination, when somebody goes into that, their body goes into a new chemistry. And that chemistry is literally medicine. It's mind medicine. We're teaching people how to create a chemical expression of medication that the body pharmaceutically creates on its own. And then from that, we use the Lifeline technique in a step-by-step manner to bring that medicine, that vibrational frequency of a higher self from the imagination, from intention, into that specific moment. And in that, the kinesiology muscle testing guides us through this roadmap, this magical mystery tour. We get to a specific moment. Sometimes people are like, oh, I know what happened there. But sometimes we're literally coming up with memories of someone's in the womb. So sometimes it's an inherited generational pattern from 22 generations back where a grandmother or grandfather had a really bad day and it's been carried on for in the DNA for 22, 23 generations. And so what kind of memories are some people are very clairvoyant and they can see things that others maybe might not be privy to. But whether somebody can or can't, it doesn't matter. The process works with children and, you know, where are their minds and brains at? They don't know. Works with animals. It's not about that. They don't need to talk about it. There's I've done over 100,000 sessions with people. And so I've had a lot of experiences, and there's a time and place where I might stop, drop, and roll, where we get to something and I just feel like, okay, we've got something big here. Take a deep breath. And then in that moment of that original occurrence that they're in, I might do that see, feel, hear process. We're like, wait a second, as you're connecting to whatever came up subconsciously, concept of being in utero, 6 months, energy is hopelessness, accumulated shame. This is obviously mother wound conversation. Mom's heart's beating with this imprinting on the developing fetus. What emotion do you feel as you connect to this? And then they're like, oh my God, this totally makes sense. I'm feeling overwhelmed. If you love and gratitude, see that, overwhelmed. And then I'll have them process that. And then I'll take them into a place where I'll go open, and depending on the chakra, let's say it's the third chakra, so that color is yellow. I'll say, imagine that there's a yellow door in front of you, and you just open it up. And you step on in, and it magnetically pulls you in, and now you're in the future where you're living the life of I am healthy, whole, and complete, feeling amazing. And you're surrounded by people that you love and that love you, and your body is the fullest expression of this. What emotion are you feeling? And then I'll take them to a future pacing of this self, and their body is literally in training from this disease state of cancer, autoimmune disease, doesn't matter what it is, that whole aspect of whatever it is, we're in training that subconscious, that 95 plus percent part, we're in training it to a higher vibration. And then, and I love it, Nathan, then you're bringing in ice baths and, you know, alkalizing the body and, you know, all these different things. But what we're working with that is the most important thing, in my humble opinion, is we're working with perception, and we're helping to shift the observer from a reactive memory of there and then to an active presence of here and now. And that's, it's on one level, it's fun to talk about. On another level, it's hard to explain until you experience it. And right? It's like the Matrix. Nobody can be.
Yeah, there's two things that come to mind. A story, maybe I'll share in a little bit. But what's coming to mind first right now is, you know, as I study more and more the yogic traditions, out of ancient India, right? And Buddhism is very similar in a lot of ways, some differences, but very similar. You know, if we're looking at the Yoga Sutras from Patanjali, for example, and we look at the Bhagavad Gita, and we look at a lot of these, you know, incredible yogic spiritual texts, all the cause of our suffering they talk about is directly related to our soul becoming identified with this physical body in this physical world, right? We identify with it. We forget that we are an infinite, unlimited, deathless being, soul, that is one with God, that can never die, that is unlimited, that experiences no pain beyond this body, right? And has full potential and omniscience, omnipresence, omnipotence, is literally made in the image of God, as talked about in the Bible. And the cause of all of this suffering, the cause of these traumas, the cause of these, you know, identifications, the cause of these beliefs, is literally because we forget all that. And we identify with this body and this human and this material world and this earth and what people say about us and what happens to us and all of that. And so now we're identified with it, and we think all this stuff really matters. But if we transcend that and go, oh, actually, none of this matters at all, right? We are actually beyond all of this. And when I leave this body, my soul goes into this next dimension, whatever that may be, free from all of this. And unless I learn these lessons and totally liberate myself from this limitation, then I'll have to come back and do it again, do it again, do it again, and suffer and suffer and suffer until I totally liberate myself from that and realize my full soul's potential. And so on one level, it's like, it's very simple. To me, it's like a very simple thing. It's like, wow, that is actually so profound and so simple.
So simple, just not always so easy.
And that's what I'm saying is like, yeah, but I've been working on this for almost 20 years. And it's like, and I'm still learning new things and still trying to overcome identifications and still, you know, releasing attachments to things. And it's like, it seems like there's always more, always
We're
more.
Human.
Always more.
We're human, and it's amazing. But here's my question, brother. Why do we forget?
Yeah, it's a good question. That's, I mean, I have some
Why do
ideas, but I'd
do
love to
we
hear what
forget?
you think.
In the Lifeline, there's 16 steps, and step number six is called the gift. It's also called the SPR, the Spirit Protection Reflex. And the Spirit Protection Reflex represents a moment in time. See, we come into this world from an eternal, omniscient, pure love, highest vibration place. And then we come in here and we forget that. But we're programmed to forget so that we can wake up and we can learn. I really believe that Earth is an experiment. I really believe that this planet is an experiment and that we're here to remember what we've been programmed to forget.
Yeah.
We're here to remember that we're all one. Yet, wow, go to the Middle East, go to the Ukraine, go to the inner city of Chicago, go to wherever it might be, go into anyone's home in any city and discover it's like, wow, this is far from oneness. Yet there's an evolutionary journey that's going on. And the spirit protection reflex represents moments in time that there's some in the politically, understood correct, like conception is seven. That's when imprinting happens. That's when the cement is wet. But there's aspect of lifetimes that those memories that we've don't remember. We've been programmed to forget them, but they live within the liver. They live within the shoulders. They live in the spine. They live within the behavior of I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. If only I were more. They live within that in us. And so there's an aspect of forgetting that ultimately creates the dynamic, and you talked about it really eloquently, the dynamic of these aspects where the victim is born, the part of ourself that goes into freeze and fright, and we surrender. And that is a real, that becomes a thought form. And we think that way, then we feel that way, then we behave that way, and then we start to believe it. And that freeze victim then can only freeze for so long, and we need connection. We need connection, but staying in this place isn't going to work. So we run to survive. We learn in the nervous system the essence of what the program is. We learn flight and we avoid and we become passive. And in that passive avoidant part of ourself, we then go into, but no, human beings need to be with each other. And so the pleaser and prover and the warrior and the doer, I'll do more, I'll do more, I'll do more until we're burned out. And that cycles people into a place where then we become pessimistic and catastrophic and negative. And you said it, we become identified with it. But at the core of a human being is a need. We need to be safe. We need to be in control. We need to have expression. We need to have worthiness within us. And once we're able to meet that need in that memory that we were programmed to forget, once that memory comes up and we can meet it with love and gratitude, we can meet it from a higher self. It's literally, it's an exhale. The system, no matter how long it is, it lets go of it. It's really so beautiful what you're doing in the world with cancer and helping people understand it. I have a dear friend of mine, her name's Sharon, and Sharon was diagnosed a year ago with stage four lung cancer that went into her liver, into her lymph, into her bones. And she had this conversation with all of her family of, okay, this is what's going on, and in that place. And I said to her, I said, you know what, Sharon? Get your dream team together. Get your dream team together. Get a great oncologist, nutritionist, acupuncturist, qigong, all these different things. Here's the role that I'm going to play with you. I'm going to be your subconscious specialist. And we work weekly, and it's about a year, and she's a cancer thriver, not a cancer survivor. She's a cancer thriver. And it's really profound. And when we're thrown into a world like this, because when God, source, universe, life says, we're going to wake you up really quickly. The diagnosis of cancer does that. You got to process the emotions, like you said. You got to connect to soul. You got to connect to spirit. You got to get your dream team together, and you got to just boom, go in and on all the different levels. It's not a cookie cutter approach at all. It's very unique to an individual, yet it requires a village to support somebody through this type of transformation. And it's profound, and we all die. In this earth school, every beautiful face takes its last breath. And so along the journey, take no credit, take no blame. The power that creates us is the power that heals us. So we do our best to be in service and be kind and caring and honest while we learn about things, because it's a vulnerable thing to talk about cancer, because people are like, what do you mean? You know, you're working with people with cancer. Yeah, of course I'm working with people with cancer. I've helped so many different people. It's not me that does the healing. We are innately designed to heal. Yet what's stopping it? What's creating the maladaptation versus the adaptation? And there's a process that people can use for themselves. They can learn to use it with others, that is a tool in the toolbox that allows for a certain level of power and presence and control in something that feels absolutely out of control in life, because life is life. And you know, we're all on the ride together. So I love what you're doing and being brave and showing up in your podcast and the way that you speak about it so intelligently and so compassionately. It's such a necessary thing in our world. It's so humbling to be human. It's a difficult gig to be a human being on planet Earth in 2024 right now.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, and thank you for that. And what a beautiful thing you've been able to do to help your friend Sharon through cancer. It's not easy for the person diagnosed with cancer, and it's not easy for their friends and family who don't understand cancer. You know, I got into cancer research and helping people with cancer because this is what I saw my grandfather go through, not only with leukemia, but with the chemotherapy and radiation that I believe is actually what killed him. I saw it completely destroy his immune system and his body and just deteriorate so quickly, and then he passed away. And then I just got so committed to learn literally everything I could about cancer, what causes it, what the root causes, and what can we do to treat it holistically. And thankfully, we've reached millions of people around the world, and we've had people go through our programs just like Sharon, stage 4 cancer, sent home to die, and nothing we can do for you except more chemo and radiation. You know, and they said, no, I don't want to do that. I'm already sick and dying, and this is making me worse. And then they change. They practice Qigong. They do meditation. They heal subconscious. They go on a plant-based diet. They sleep better. They exercise, start loving themselves more, right? And all of a sudden, you know, 16 months later, I'm hearing from them and they're saying I'm cancer free. And I'm just like, it's incredible to see, because we, just like you, I and my team and people we work, we don't heal anybody, right? I love what you said earlier. You said the power that creates us is the power that heals us. It's 100% true. And it's because we are blocked from that power. We block ourselves from it, which is what allows the disease to thrive. Like, cancer is not an enemy. I teach people all the time, cancer is just a survival mechanism in the body. It's because we have damaged our body so much. The mitochondria have been damaged and they're dying off from toxins, pollutants, stress, trauma, chronic inflammation, you know, not taking care of ourselves. And it is, it's that wake-up call. It's that pre-designed wake-up call. It says, hey, you're off the path over here, lost in the wilderness, right? We need to wake up and you need to get back on the path. And that path is a path of health and happiness and love and kindness and compassion and gratitude. I went to a comedy show last night. One of the comedians was like, he's like, who else in here? He goes, I don't like people. There's like 2,000 people in the audience, right? And he's like, who else? I fucking hate people. Who else hates people in here? And like, literally, like, everyone's like, woo! And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I don't hate people. I genuinely like people. I genuinely like helping people. But you know, if you asked me that question 20 years ago, I probably would have raised my hand and screamed like everybody else, right? It was sad to see how many people resonate with, oh, I don't like other people. And I think that has happened because we've become so disconnected from source. We've become so disconnected from God and from our true inner soul, right? And when you start to love yourself more and have a deeper connection with spirit, you start to, and have more compassion for yourself, you start to have more compassion for others and can understand what people are going through. And when they cut you off in traffic, you can be a little more understanding, right? When somebody says something negative or bad to you, you can be a little more understanding. Instead of hating others and not enjoying others and not like being around other people, start to have a little bit more compassion and love for other people. And I think it's both ways. We practice compassion for others or practice compassion for animals, which is why I choose to be plant-based, because I see animals who have a soul just like we do. And I say, well, if I practice compassion for them and I practice compassion for humans, I practice compassion for myself, then, you know, that puts me on that path towards living a better life and being more in alignment with my highest self and highest purpose on the planet. And the more we do that, then these cancer diagnoses and these, you know, disease diagnoses, they don't become as much of a problem. But the real problem is the system that people get thrown into. I have a really good friend who's been in holistic health for a long time. He was diagnosed with cancer and he went straight to the cancer center and, you know, immediately was thrown into the system. He goes, this is so scary. You know, they put fear into me and they pushed me, you know, to do this and that and surgery and chemo and all these things. And it's just like, he didn't know what to do. And he's got seven doctors and nurses and people coming and talking to him and go, oh, you got cancer. We got to do this, that, that. And he's been into holistic health for so long, right? And to get put in that system and experience it himself and feel the fear that so many people go through that just go, all right, give me whatever drug you can give me, get this thing out of me. And unfortunately, you know, the recurrence rates are so high with people who go through conventional therapies who are not implementing additional alternative holistic, you know, supportive therapies and getting to the root cause. Because, you know, cancer is not a lack of chemotherapy and radiation, right? Cancer is continuous damage to the cellular structure and what I say just disconnection from source, from our soul. And the more we get connected, you know, the more the body can heal itself.
Well, this is such a great conversation. I mean, there's so many things that I'd love to talk about here, but just that fear of your friend, that's the portal for him right then and there. Like, okay, there's a question that I have people answer when we're using the Lifeline technique. It's called the truth question. And I want you to think about, how can a question be called the truth question? Because the only way a truth question be called the truth question is just everybody answers the same way. If one person answers differently, then it no longer is a truth question. And so as we think about, and I want everybody listening right now, just take a moment and connect to your body, connect to if you've been diagnosed with a disease or you've got a bum shoulder or you've got irritable bowel or, you know, you've got a bum ankle or you're going through a divorce or you've got a child that's sick or parents that are aging and they're sick and money is tight. I want you to take a moment right now and listen to this truth question. If you could choose to create your life, design it, manifest it, roll out the red carpet, blow out birthday candles, and make a wish for the day in the upcoming year, would you ever choose to create it with a cancer diagnosis? Would you choose to create it where you're fearful and you feel out of control and there's nothing you can do? Would you choose to create it where your family is in conflict, where your money is in poverty? Would you choose any level, let alone all the levels of pain, fear, and stress that you're currently going through? Nathan, I'll have you answer for everyone. What's the answer?
Yeah, that answer is going to be no.
Hell no is the answer. Hell no. And it seems like it's a stupid ass question. However, check it out. It's stupid when we're conscious. But we observe, we take people through observation and we honestly observe the real symptoms and stressors that are going on in our body and life. And we honestly observe them and we rate them and we answer this question and we go, well, of course you're not choosing it, but you're still experiencing this. And when you're experiencing something, that means you're conscious of it. And when you're conscious of something, that 5% at the most, that's the part that can choose. So when you're observing something that you wouldn't choose, but it's still going on, that's not action, that's reaction. That's your subconscious mind. And now from this place where we've identified the topography of the invisible, mysterious, magical subconscious mind, from there, now we can create a relationship with the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind, it is not logical or creative. It's emotional. So if you want to create a change on a subconscious level, you got to connect to your heart.
Yeah.
And you got to start to listen to your heart. And in the face of life, whatever it is that you're facing right now, my friends, what does your heart desire to feel? Now, what does your heart want to feel? Now, what does it need to feel? What is your heart when it comes to the dream of your life? What is it that your heart desires to feel? And the key here, and this is the number one rule here in setting intention, focus where you're going. Not what you want to make go away, not what you want to clear, not what you want to finally be done with, not what you want to pretend isn't there. In the face of what's going on, accept where you are. Acceptance allows the beginning of change to occur. From this place, what does your heart desire to feel? And someone will go, like the example I said, I desire to feel healthy, whole, and complete. And now we go, all right, make that as if you're already there. Why? Because your subconscious mind's going to follow you. It's like a dog. If you train it, it will follow you. If you don't train it, you're going to have a bad dog, you're going to have a bad mind, and that's going to affect your body. It's going to affect your life. So we go, I am healthy, whole, and complete. Because if I was there, I could say the two most powerful words. I'm healthy, whole, and complete. I'm healthy, whole, and complete. And now we go through this process. And what's really cool is there's an aspect of the flow chart. There's step number 10. It's called an emotional expression channel. It has to do with how the subconscious memory expresses itself behaviorally. So when the 4-year-old gets triggered in me, I behave like I'm still in that 4-year-old environment.
Right.
One of the options, there's different emotional expression channels. Thought virus, emotional cancer, personal invasion, shock, life, death. These are all behavioral types. But one of them is emotional cancer. And since we're talking about cancer, I want to talk about this. Emotional cancer, I never tell, if emotional cancer shows up, I never say, oh, you've got cancer. I never say that, right? It's not what it is. Emotional cancer is a cancer of the mind. And when we think about what cancer is simply a cell, a normal cell that is mutated. And in its mutation, our immune system that tells self from non-self does not recognize it. And as a result of the immune system not recognizing the normal cell that's mutated, then that cell continues to spread, it metastasizes, and it goes on its own. The body's a reflection of the mind. If we break this down from an emotional point of view, we go to ourselves, well, if the immune system is not recognizing the cell, it means I'm not recognizing myself. You brought it up earlier. It's like it gives us, emotional cancer gives us the ability to ask the ultimate question, who am I?
Right.
And now it becomes, who am I to Nathan? Who am I to my kids? Who am I to my mom? Who am I to my brothers? Who am I to my clients? Who am I to any Tom, Dick, and Jerry? Like, who am I? And what ends up happening is emotional cancer is I mute because I'm in a reactive zone. I'm subconsciously, no choice. I change who I am for you, for her, for him, for their. I mutate who I am to make you feel comfortable at the expense of myself. That's emotional cancer. I don't know who I am. If I knew who I was, I'd know that I'm pure love, I'm eternal, and everything is happening in perfect timing and in order, and I'm supported by a universe that loves me and loves me in the most beautiful way. But I forget. I've been programmed to forget. I'm in this spirit protection reflex, and now the behavior of this reactive, maladaptive reaction is showing up in not only a behavior, energetically, frequency, vibration, but then it actually ends up showing up in the cells. Everyone with physical cancer has emotional cancer. And not everyone with emotional cancer has physical cancer. Just like if I have my gallbladder removed because I've got gallbladder disease, I've got gallbladder meridian stagnation. If not everyone with gallbladder stagnation has gallbladder disease. So if we can harmonize the gallbladder channel and we can create balance where there's natural flow there, the gallbladder stays optimally healthy. And then here we are. The same thing in with an emotional cancer. One of the greatest quotes I heard as a holistic chiropractor, acupuncturist, is, may we never know the diseases we prevented. May we never know the diseases we prevented. And most people aren't in that space, you know, Nathan, where they're like, you know what? I saw what's happening and now I am like committed passionately to living my life in this way. And look at you, where you're in service, where you're now spreading this light and love to other people. How amazing. How amazing. It's quite a journey, because to really begin to understand the mind, but not only understand it, because understanding it is kind of bullshit if you don't know how to use it.
Right.
If you don't know how to use it, I don't want to know that it's possible. I want to know that what it is, and then show me how to. And then I'm in a place where I really get giddy. And so I love having these conversations where there's an application for people to really use when they're in real human experiences that are really tough, because it's really simple, like you said, but when the diagnosis or like your friend is in it and it's scary as all hell, that fear and that experience of looking at death right up close and personal is a real tough pill to swallow. And so, you know, learning things like what we're talking about, and it's humbling because you got to keep on doing the practice. You don't get somewhere and you just stop and live happily ever after. This is for the rest of our life until we do take our last breath. And may my last breath be with infinite love and gratitude in my heart. May it be with infinite love and gratitude in my mind. And there's a life well lived. That's the practice, not the perfect.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what the great yogic masters teach as well, is that, you know, your true thoughts and energy and vibration of your mind as you pass, right, as you're dying and going into the next dimension of life, as I like to call it, your last thoughts are going to determine what your next life looks like, right? So if you're still in this, you know, regret and anger and shame and blame and the world was bad to me and God hates me and I have this terrible life, and then you pass with those thoughts, that they teach that determines what your next plane of existence is going to be for a while, until you learn from that and go to the next level and go to the next level, go to the next level, right? We're never stuck in one place forever. Every negative opportunity is a portal, a doorway, as you said, a chance to grow. I want to go back to the question that you brought up, because I want to hear your thoughts on this, because you had asked, you know, why do we forget, right? And I agree with your answer. I think that's spot on. And I think there's also, at least from my perception on this, I think there's something really interesting about this idea as well, that like, why do we forget? We come here to the earth, we, you know, embody a human body, we're this soul, and we forget that we're this unlimited, infinite soul, and that we, you know, are a child of God, and that we have all this unlimited potential, and we get attached and bound to this body and identified with it and think that this is all there is. Why does that happen? Well, if you look at a child, right, a baby, and if that baby were born, let's say that soul were born into an enlightened family, you had a mother and a father, and they both were truly enlightened, right? The most compassionate, loving, kind, caring, wise human beings on the planet, right? A Mother Teresa and a Paramahansa Yogananda, right, got together and had a baby, and they raised that baby. In my perception, it's very likely that that baby would probably be an enlightened being, like, by 8 years old, right? After the 7 years of subconscious, you know, training, like, that, because they're not being programmed with these negative influences. And if they are, those parents know how to help that child through it. And by 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, this person's already an enlightened being. And the reason I say, I think that's how all of us actually come to the earth. Yeah, we might have some of the subconscious imprint from past generations and DNA, you know, generational trauma and so forth. But given the right environment in which we're brought up, see, I think we already come here totally pure, right? And then we're programmed by our parents, our society, the influences around us, to not realize that we are that pure, infinite, all-loving, you know, image of God, human being. And then it takes the rest of our life or multiple lifetimes to overcome that and realize that truth, you know? And then you look at someone like, you know, some of the saints of the last 100 or 200 years. I mentioned Yogananda, you know, look at his family he grew up in, right? I mean, he was born into a family that was already incredibly spiritually advanced. His father was the disciple of, you know, an incredible saint and guru at the time in India. He was already brought up in that environment. He naturally sought that, and then, you know, became, you know, was one of the people who don't know, go read Autobiography of a Yogi, right?
Amazing.
But there are multiple people like him, an incredible saint, Sri Yukteswar, which was his teacher, you know, Lahiri Mahashay, who was his teacher, you know, the great Babaji, obviously out of India. So I think we all come here pure, enlightened already, and then we just get all this shit shoveled on top of us, right, because of our environment and parents and so forth, and there's no blame there. It's just part of our awakening journey and what we need to learn to transcend. But if we were all born into an enlightened family, don't you think that we would already, like, boom, we'd overcome everything right away and basically be enlightened, you know, as a teenager?
I got a lot to say about that. I mean, first and foremost, the critical mass of world peace to inner peace, and not everyone has to wake up yet. Once we reach a certain level, there's a tipping point of the 100th monkey, and a consciousness emerges.
Right.
And I want to circle back to something we were talking about earlier, and that is, as much as we learn, as much as we know, as much as we grow, as much as we practice, the subconscious mind will still be 7 times faster than our best ninja trained self. So in any, for an example, and then once again, this is not blame or pointing fingers, it's just the design that the pain or the fear or stress isn't the problem, it's the portal. It's not something that's bad if somebody has something that's going on. The Dalai Lama is an enlightened being. He's an enlightened being on the planet. The Dalai Lama had his gallbladder removed, and the gallbladder has to do with anger and resentment. And of course he's got anger and resentment. His people were annihilated, and he had to flee his homeland and different things. But the guy's an absolutely enlightened master and practicer and of service of the world, of peace and happiness and laughter and goodness. So I agree that it's amazing to come into this world, and one day we will have a world. I really believe it. We will have a world where mothers and fathers know how to love themselves, love each other, and not only understand the love, but how to put into action, how to have humility, how to repair, how to be compassionate, how to be forgiving, how to do this. And that the family unit will truly grow and evolve in our world. And communities will grow, and people of different races and genders and religions will be curious about each other, and we will be in a place. It's still at that time, Nathan. My belief is the subconscious mind will still take us 7 times faster. It will still take us to another evolutionary pace. And maybe, and right now there's some pretty wild stuff that are going on. There's these drones that are going on in the East Coast, you know, and what is that? Are alien in intelligences coming to visit us? Who knows what this enlightened Earth might be like, and why we would evolve like a chrysalis as humanity into a butterfly of kind humans, humankind? Why, what would that possibly look like? And where might that take us into a vortex of other galaxies? I don't know. I mean, that is just a far out concept for sure. And everyone's poop stinks. It's part of the design. That's not bad or wrong. It just is what it is. And we do our best. And I love the humble aspect of how you put it, as far as that this isn't about blame. I've got 3 beautiful kids, 20, 17, and 16, and they're amazing, brilliant, enlightened beings. And they were raised by a mom and dad that were amazing. We really did our best. I really feel grateful for how we showed up and how we were ready to have kids. And it was just so wonderful. Yet every person has portals, and the portals aren't bad. They feel bad. They're not wrong. They feel wrong. They're a gift in strange wrapping paper. They're a feedback. They're a mechanism. And we're learning to communicate a language that only the body can express in the body's way of expressing, that only a behavior can express in the way of behavior. And that's why we've got a DSM, whatever it is these days. That's why we've got diagnoses where we can see patterns from energetic levels to physical levels. We understand things on a much deeper level. But I'm not sure if, like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, we never have a problem again. We never have a pain again with a mom and dad are of a certain level of consciousness, that this child will just grow up in a world where it has soft landings everywhere. I'm not sure if I am in alignment with that completely, just because I don't look at the pain as the problem. And pain is a part of life. It is. It's necessary. It helps us create healthy boundaries. A flame or a person or whatever it might be, it's helping us learn and grow and heal and evolve in ways that only pain can do. But it's not the bad thing. And what's your take on that?
No, I agree. You know, pain's a good thing in those regards. I guess what I'm thinking is along the lines of, you know, let's say you're a truly enlightened being. And when I say enlightened, I'm talking totally liberated from attachment to the physical body whatsoever, right? So things don't actually cause you pain anymore, right? Your wife could leave you, your business could fail, you could end up homeless, you could have no food, you could, and you're still happy no matter what. That when I say enlightened, that's what I mean, like, because that's
kind I hear of you.
Like that, you know, that's the pie and the that's the highest level of, you know, enlightenment, let's say, from what the Buddha taught, from what the yogis teach. And is that possible? Most people think no, it's not. I like to believe in big things, and I think that's possible. Am I there yet? No, you know, but do I think, you know, it's possible for everybody? I think so. You know, maybe even if it takes 1,000 years or 1,000 lifetimes. And so in that case, like, pain doesn't actually affect you in any negative way because you've already transcended it. You're no longer, you know, identified with the physical body, the physical world at all. Not that you're not a part of it and not that you're not serving and supporting, but you're in that, you know, have you read the book about Sri Ramakrishna's life?
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. It's called The Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. And he lived around the same time as Paramahansa Yogananda. And he basically, you know, went through this incredible spiritual crash course early in his life to discover, you know, God within himself. And, you know, he would go into these, you know, ecstatic, blissful states of just pure communion with God, just on after a lot of practice. And he went through a lot of pain and you know, and struggle and suffering, mental, emotional suffering and so forth, until he finally reached that state of just pure enlightenment. And then he would go into these just constant ecstatic blissful states all the time, and it didn't matter what was happening around him or to him or to his body. I mean, he'd fall and break his arm, and he'd, you know, and he's like, God, why is this happening, right? But he'd be in this blissful state, and not, it didn't, you know, do anything to him, because he was transcended beyond the physical realm. He was literally in, I mean, how I understand it is he was in that pure loving state of oneness with God, oneness with his soul. And what's really interesting is I read the book about St. Francis's life, you know, St. Francis of Assisi. So mm-hmm. here's a Catholic guy who went through a very similar experience as in, you know, in the, I think, 1200s, 1300s in Italy, right? And who has the exact same kind of experience and would go into these just incredible blissful states beyond the physical body, connection with God, but through the Catholic path, and then, you know, lead millions of people into a deeper connection with God and spirit within themselves. And, you know, 800 years later, there are 700 years later, you know, there's an Indian guy, you know, Indian, who became a saint out of India following the Hindu path, who has the same experience, you know, and then there's many, many people, like stories of people like them all around the world for centuries. So I guess that's what I mean when I'm saying, like, in like I would debate whether the Dalai Lama's enlightened or not, you know, that I guess that's my judgment, whatever. Is he, you know, bringing world peace? Is he an incredibly loving human being? Is he wise and intelligent and peaceful? Is he doing amazing work? Absolutely. Is he totally at that kind of level of enlightenment that I think is possible for all human beings, that these other saints, you know, people have told these stories of these other saints? I don't think so, but who am I to judge, you know? So I guess that's what I mean.
Yeah, I love it.
And I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying it's just a,
you know, it's a great dialogue, brother. And I love that St. Francis of Assisi, like you, was a lover of animals.
Yeah.
And right?
Yeah.
Right. And there's been people that have been waking up. And Marianne Williamson, in her book, Return to Love,
yeah,
her one quote is, our greatest fear is not that we're inadequate. It's not about the pain. It's not about the problem. Our greatest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. And you talked about this. Who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Who are you not to be? You are a child of God. You are born to make manifest the glory of God that's within you. It's not just in some of us. It's in every one of us. And as we're liberated from our own fears, our presence automatically liberates others. And so as we speak of the role that the subconscious mind is playing, in the health of our bodies, in our behaviors, in what we attract and what we repel, we discover that the subconscious mind is attempting to awaken us in a way that we'd otherwise never wake up. And I truly believe it is like so many of the ascended masters throughout all of history. It is to be enlightened, to be light in human body, and to live and breathe in this way on this planet, and to be of service, and to, in our presence, help others know what they're all about and what they're capable of. And that is a unique journey for each of us. And it's humbling. In 2018, my wife at that time, we had been married for 19 years, decided that we were going to get a divorce. Three kids. And we had already made a plan to take our kids out of school and travel around the world for a year.
Wow.
And we're like, you know what? We're going to get divorced, but let's do it anyways.
Wow.
And we did. And we did it.
That's crazy.
We did 3 months in the States, 4 months in Australia, a month in New Zealand, a month in Vietnam, a month in Thailand. We went to Cambodia, and we ended up in Bali, and COVID ended up sending us back. And we did this so that we could be good for each other, and most importantly, good for our kids. Mm. And we came back, and then we nested for 3 years where we had one house. For the kids, they stayed there because we love our children. We love each other enough to be good people. Was it painful? Oh my God.
Yeah.
It had moments that were so difficult, yet we used tools and we practiced. Did we get triggered? I raised both hands. There were moments that it was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. What the hell am I doing? Am I some kind of idiot? At the same time, it was the most beautiful, precious thing. And we still actually, she still works in the company. And we still have such an amazing way of communicating and connecting. And I care about her deeply. I love her and I want the best for her. And she wants the best for me. And that's an aspect of like, what is enlightenment? Do you have to be in the foothills of the Himalayas and
right.
Silent for years, months, whatever, and in this constant, you know, state of meditation or mantra. In our day and age today, anyone and everyone can wake up to the gifts in strange wrapping paper and choose love and transform. And my passion is teaching the Lifeline technique for people to learn it for themselves, for people to be able to, as coaches or practitioners or doctors or holistic enthusiasts that geek out in the subconscious mind, to learn a technology for themselves, for family or their clients, and to use it as part of a dream team that when we get a call or we get a diagnosis or whatever that life throws our way, because anything can happen to anyone in any way. It truly can. Even the best people that have the best diets and the best exercise, things happen in life.
Yep.
Things happen in life. I've seen it enough in my 30 years of practice. And so, you know, what does it mean to the, all right, another gift in strange wrapping paper. What does it mean to be able to roll up the sleeves and bend my knees and lean on in and I'm starting new right now, no matter what I've done in the past. You know, that my friend Sharon, she was an enlightened person. She knew so much. She had studied so much. And she's like, how could this happen to me? You know, but that was part of the journey.
Right.
Part of the journey. And I'm sure there's so many people listening that are like, oh my God, for some of the conversation that we're having, some people might be thinking, you guys are on crack. Like, how can we talk about, right? How can we talk about all this high level stuff? There's a humbling part. And this high level stuff is real. It's beautiful. It's the deal. It's amazing. And yet there's also such a humility to life. Life will do life's thing,
oh, yeah.
You know, it'll, all of us.
The moment, you know, we think we've got it figured out, it'll come along and humble.
Right.
I'm sure.
Right.
Happened to me 100 times. So
me too, at least.
And I'm sure it's not done yet.
Right.
Well, Darren, I know we're down to the last minute. First of all, I just want to say this has been an awesome conversation. I feel like I could just talk with you about this stuff for hours.
Yeah,
so thank you for taking the time to come on the podcast. Thank you for, you know, your decades of work and studying all these different modalities and putting it into a system that really helps people transform their lives. I love how, you know, yeah, we're talking about this high level stuff, but then we bring it back down to the practical. We all have to start somewhere, and we all have to start with what we're dealing with right now, whether it's that cancer diagnosis, that shoulder pain, that loss of the job, the self-doubt, whatever that thing is that is we feel is limiting us, that's our entry point, right? And to do something about it, to study the Lifeline technique, to read your books, to start a meditation practice, to whatever it is, but to start taking action towards recognizing and resolving that which we feel is limiting us. And you know, if people have listened all the way to the end of this, then we have, you know, you're obviously very serious about your own wellness and health and well-being. And so the question is, what's your next step? And then listen to that and then follow it, right? And so I just want to thank you for all the, you know, amazing work you've done. You're obviously incredibly brilliant and helping so many people. So thanks for coming on. And also, how can people get in touch with you? What's the best way for them to learn more about your work and get your books and get in touch with you?
Yeah, first, thank you so much for the opportunity. This was a definitely fun conversation. I loved it. It just, all of a sudden, I'm like, wow, I'm really enjoying this conversation with Nathan. So thank you so much. I'm honored. You're a brilliant guy and you're making a huge difference in the world.
Thank you.
My website is thelifelinecenter.com, thelifelinecenter.com. If you go on there, one thing is get a free gift of 2 weeks of a group Lifeline healing circle. I do it every week. You can check it out if it resonates. It's my low-hanging fruit as far as somebody that if you end up liking it, we charge a minimal amount for people to be able to do. We have a weekly practice of working on the subconscious mind. You can get that for free. Those of you that are like, whoa, I want to learn this. I have a whole Lifeline certification program. I've got certified Lifeline practitioners, CLPs, in 28 countries around the world. And you can learn this. It's an online e-learning course. There's webinars, there's multiple courses all the way until you get to what we call celebration of learning. Other people call it a test. I call it a celebration of learning because you're gonna be so happy you learned this. You're gonna love it. It's
call
gonna be
it
great.
A test. That's funny.
Right? That's my eternal optimist. It is, but it's a written and verbal process. I want to make sure that everyone knows this inside and out so that when you do get the call or when life does shift into a reactive gear, that you got a tool that you can apply. And so that's why we call it the celebration of learning. But if that's something that you are resonating with and you're curious about, reach out. Our team is really loving and caring. We want to serve people, and send us an email and we'll guide you in a way. But there's really great opportunities to learn and become certified in the Lifeline.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks again. It's awesome to get to meet you and learn a little bit more about your work and all the great work you're doing in the world. So yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, brother. Infinite love and gratitude.
Yeah. Infinite love and gratitude. I like that.
Thank you for listening to the Nathan Crane podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and share this on social media. Then head over to nathancrane.com for your free ebook.
So when we're talking about, you know, what are these underlying causes and conditions of these chronic diseases, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, they all have very similar, if not identical, causes. And that's the thing, is when we get to the root cause of these diseases, we can not only prevent these diseases from ever happening, but empower our bodies to heal from them.
In every one of our cells, we have tens and hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions that are happening every second that are cycling back and forth. It's like sort of a yin and yang.
And, you know, for me, the soul, soul's purpose is evolution. It doesn't care about comfort. It cares about evolution. Mm. And so I think so long as we are following our soul, then we will evolve. And I think what sometimes blocks us from living our purpose, from manifesting that next level of our expression, is we have not evolved.
There is also time for letting go all the expectations and relax and just breathe and be grateful for what you have achieved.